Welcome to The Rot Focus, a podcast for rotters, newbies, and veterans, and everyone in between. We're hosted by M.A. Lee with the assistance of Remy Black and Edie Rooms, all from Rotters, Inc. Books. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Each episode lasts as long as it takes to fix a quick dinner, grab a short commute, or take a brisk walk. Resources and links are in the show notes. Visit us at therotfocus.blogspot.com. Now, on to this week's episode. Around my sixth grade year, I had a startling realization. At school, we must have talked about future plans. I know that I didn't think of future careers and jobs on my own. I was reading. That was not unusual. And for once, I turned past the last page of a very satisfying book and encountered the author's biography. I do not remember the book, but I remember the author, Phyllis A. Whitney, the uncrowned American queen of mystery and romantic suspense. I read through this biography of Whitney and thought, she writes for her career. I want to write books like her. I want to write very good books like her. That became my goal, to write very good books like Phyllis A. Whitney. A handful of years ago, after I started my own publishing, I stumbled across Whitney's Guide to Fiction Writing. Originally published in 1982, that date was 6 years before the Mystery Writers of America gave her a Grand Master Award for Lifetime Achievement, and 8 years before a similar award from Romance Writers of America. When she died in 2008, Whitney had published more than 70 novels, mostly for adults, but she had several good mysteries for young teenagers. She's been described as an inspiration for the founding of the Sisters in Crime organization. There's a whole backstory to that. I'd rather not get into it. Many writers will decry Whitney as old school. Indeed, the writers I've focused on during this series on defeating writer's block, Gardner and Delton, Stewart and Whitney, they are classified as old school. But they have proved their success with their output, which continues to be read to this day. They are all old school, paper-based, with writers' notebooks and binders and journals rather than software apps. With these old school writers, I doubt we'd achieve 75% on computer use, and we'd be stuck at 0% for laptops or cloud-based programs. But we want what they achieve. Long-term writing success that didn't succumb to writer's block. Writing itself hasn't changed, only the technology. Storytelling began in prehistoric times, and it has changed very little since then. Most current writers use a notes app to collect research and images. Some have apps for character templates and sample genre outlines for plot planning. Writing on a keyboard is different from writing with pen and paper, which is a more intimate experience. Neil Gaiman pointed that out on computer writing, which is actually detrimental, for it leads to easy distractions. Another writer we've looked at in the past few years likes to rough draft on paper, then shift to the keyboard, saying that scenes and plot twists are not then set in stone and are more easily changed. Dean Wesley Smith has two computers at the least, one devoted to writing, without internet access. When he has the story set, ready to publish, only then does he move it with a flash drive to his internet-connected computer. The old typewriters didn't hurt writers either. They weren't connected to anything. So while computers have eased revision and research, publishing and promotions, they may have actually hurt the writing itself. And that blinking cursor on the electronic screen seems more merciless about writer's block than a simple blank writing paper. That's the starting point for every writer, and we have to tackle it and run beyond to the goal line. Whitney calls this a working discipline. As a writer, she says, "You are your own boss, and working discipline is the most important habit of all to develop." That's right. Discipline keeps us working when we'd rather not. She continues, "Every beginning writer, and sometimes the experienced one, suffers from the temptation not to write. You'll undoubtedly find certain enticements to lure you away from your typewriter. Would it matter if you take the morning off? Yes, it would matter. Or perhaps you just don't feel like writing today. This is the best and worst excuse of all. And unless you are too ill to get out of bed, you should pay no attention to it. By now, my own working habits are stronger than any of the distractions, though I am not a tense-driven workaholic. When my writing period is behind me, I can set my writing aside to do other things. But being a moderate workaholic can make your life very interesting and worthwhile." None of us want that image of the driven workaholic writer, although it's the same image we have of the writer pushing for a deadline. We somehow think that the writing is not good, not surprising, or suspenseful when the writer hunkers down to finish. We don't think about revision and its possibilities, do we? But that's what we must keep in mind, for even when we are not driven, workaholic writers, we still need to see our manuscript with new eyes before we spiral it out into the world. Creating that working discipline is Whitney's first solution to defeat writer's block. She advises a regular time, even if that time is short. And then, she says, we have our view of ourselves. We need to view ourselves as a writer with a regular writing time, and distractions and disruptions will rarely intrude. Whitney says, "So you say to yourself and to others, 'Yes, I am a writer. I write, and I am a writer.' Of course, nobody believes this in the beginning, but you stick to your typewriter and your schedule, and one day, to the astonishment of all, you place a published story, a published book, before their eyes, before their disbelieving eyes. Only then will those around you begin to understand that you really do need time to be alone and write." No matter how many books you publish, she continues, this is a battle you'll have to fight all your life. You'll need to tell your friends not to call you at certain hours. And if they are friends, they will comply, however puzzled. You'll give up invitations you might like to accept and miss out on all sorts of occasions and activities. Personally, I find that's true, and only my will to be writing can prevent the distractions and disruptions. As Whitney says, writing time is sacred and not to be interrupted. The mindset of I'm a writer, I write, I am writing, that's powerful. Our attention is redirected to our goal. No longer do we play at writing. We become devoted to it. Its importance is revealed in the time we schedule for it. After all, regular jobs require time on a schedule. When we want our job as a writer, we must schedule and use that time. Whitney mentions another aspect of the writer's mindset. Once the time problem is worked out, however unsatisfactorily in the beginning, you must develop your own writing pattern. You will need to overcome your self-consciousness about that sheet of paper with nothing on it. You are going to fill it. When you do, then at the end of your hour or whatever time you have, you'll feel pleased with yourself and everything else all day long. Self-consciousness, that has a bit of imposter syndrome, doesn't it? Yet the greatest part of it is what our writing reveals about the inner workings of our minds, which we may hesitate to share. That which our imagination thrives upon, even to evil imaginings that can horrify and terrify, and which I do not want to write, even as the story demands it. Our minds become summer houses with open windows and doors, and the savvy reader can suss out our motivations and conflict behaviors, our inner workings and dreams and wishes and revulsions and repulsions from common themes that develop in novel after novel. We can serve the story, as actors say, when they're trying to explain acting choices that crossed societal norms. Or we can find a different means to serve the story, a creative answer, whichever choice our self-consciousness is comfortable with. Reveal too much, we may find ourselves blocked. Create a dark mirror for our revelation, and we may satisfy the most awkward and the shyest corner of our self-consciousness. Whatever choice we make, as Whitney says, at the end of our writing time, we should feel pleased with ourselves in our writing. And we will return to that writing schedule and maintain it without any hesitation. Whitney's schedule reinforces her memory of her writing so that it becomes a recognition. This is what I did. This is what I have done. This is what I'm doing. This is what I will do. She has a calendar for each story idea, and she tracks her progress through each element of the story. On page 19 of the Guide to Fiction Writing, she describes her process. Near the top of the first page in the calendar section, I write plotting begun, plotting finished, with spaces for entering dates. Sometimes when I feel that I've been working on a book forever, I can go back and check the actual date. Or if I find that I'm moving too slowly, these dates serve to remind me to stop wasting time. I will also want a record of when I started the writing, when I finished the revision, and how long the final typing took. Over her writing years, she has judged how long it will take her to write a book. My rough breakdown, she says, runs something like this: 2 months for the planning, 4 months for the writing, 2 months to do it over. Of course, that timetable seldom works out exactly that way, she shares. The planning may go so fast that I'm through in a month or less. The writing may take a shorter time or longer than I expected. And the revision may go on for the rest of the year on some novels and require very little time for others. She also adds that every book is different, just as you will be a different person at different times in your writing life. Don't feel that you must pin yourself down to a rigid schedule. Let your material and your own inclination guide you. That's important for us to remember. Even when we reach the ability to write 90,000 words in less than 4 months, we soon discover that some books are longer, some are shorter, some fly, some are a struggle. Some chapters fly, some require a stoppage of weeks, and sometimes life gets in the way. We can track the progress of a story, but we cannot demand every time for every story that the progress will flow smoothly. Life happens, you know. Whitney writes 6 days a week, but she could not guarantee a word count or a page count for that time. She also knew writing requires days of no words to be counted. She might be revising or plotting. A tracking calendar had one chief purpose for Whitney: to keep me at my desk, at my work. It is so easy to say, "I don't feel like writing today." But I know, she says, that I will leave an accusing gap in my record, and such gaps add up to not getting a novel done on schedule. Besides, if there are too many days when we don't feel like writing, we'd better examine what we're doing and find out the cause. We writers have to examine when we have gaps in our writing. When we avoid our writing, something is wrong with the writing itself. A plot element is missing. A character requires her own scenes. Research is needed. The overall theme is totally wrong for us. It's crucial to start writing. It's the key. Even if we don't like those words, we can change them. We just have to start. Whitney reinforces this truth back on page 12. Once you have something down on paper, You'll have an easier time getting back to work the next day. You read through what you've written, making corrections, or you do it over. Your imagination catches fire, and you move ahead with new writing. Or if you have trouble pushing on, the material in your notebook can be worked on so that you always have something you can do to renew the creative flow. What I like best of all, she says, are those working hours when something magical comes to life, and I can create something as real as a book when there was nothing at all when I started. That's what we writers live for, when something magical comes to life, when we create a story from the blankness. Whatever means you use to finish a novel, Whitney says, must feel right for you. I only know that when I began to write, I had difficulty keeping my interest high after the first few chapters. My ideas fizzled out rather quickly because I didn't know in advance where I was going. There were frightening dry spells when nothing moved. I learned how painful it could be to want to write and yet find myself unable to fill those blank pages, sometimes for weeks on end. I needed to find a way to keep my story growing so that I would never run dry. She's describing writer's block, isn't she? The blank times, the dry spells, when ideas fizzle out, when we don't know where we're going, when we find ourselves unable to fill blank pages. What method did Whitney develop to keep her story growing? Earl Stanley Gardner had his journals with their detailed notes. Whitney is a believer in a writing binder that contains all the snippets of ideas. She began with a manila folder, which grew into a notebook. She says, I began with a simple organization of my time and my material. I gave up the idea that I must always spend my 3 hours a day in creative work at my typewriter. As the system developed, I found that doing much more preparatory work than I'd been willing to spend before was paying off and shortening my efforts in the long run. Being able to keep constructively busy on some phase of my notebook, whether I was actually writing or not, was wonderfully stimulating to my imagination, and it kept the creative flow high. The method, roughly, she continues, is to give as much time as I need to the planning phase, developing characters and plot, collecting all the stray ideas that may be useful, doing a sketchy outline, working back and forth in my notebook until a rich fund of material begins to emerge. The real heart of my notebook system has to do with plotting, characters, and outline. These story ideas are detailed and highly organized into sections starting with her calendar, plotting, characters, outline, and more. She presents this information in detail in the book. Writers encountering problems with a block may not have mulled over the story enough. Remember, Whitney devotes 2 months for planning before she begins writing. And additional planning days occur as she writes and as she revises. Much plotting and character development is logical next steps, more details, rational and instinctive, based on our experience and knowledge. Then we hit a workflow barrier, a block, without rhyme or reason after we've had days and weeks of smooth writing, and we need ideas. What do we do? In all the discussions of creativity, Whitney was most interested in having constant access to the creative side of her brain to coax what she once called inspiration into working on demand when I most needed it. There were sometimes long, dry periods during which the imaginative flow ceased. I wasn't suffering from true writer's block. I could write, and I did, but with no great satisfaction or confidence in what I was doing. The process was too mechanical. So she could write, which wasn't a block. The words had no flow, no drive, though. We've talked about this before. We can put words on a page. We may not like them. They may be a nonfiction project rather than the fiction project we so desperately want to finish. Whitney does have people she envies those writers whose creativity is active all the time, and they have only to put their fingers on the typewriter keys for words to pour out. Such writers are, as a rule, she says, enormously prolific, and they can often write with very little advance planning. I'm not like that, she shares, and I had to find a more conscious method by which to stimulate the unconscious creative stream. When the flow fails me, it may be that I'm not listening to my own inner voices. When there's a balking, it usually means that I'm going down a wrong road and had better stop to re-examine, to search out what is wrong, and develop a new approach. I've learned not to ignore that warning voice that makes me feel uneasy. In order to put this force to its fullest use, there are three practical steps to be taken, she shares. These steps are mentioned again and again in writing on creativity. 1. Put raw material into your mind. Ask questions. 2. Give yourself time for this to be processed. And 3. Examine what has come into your mind to find the answers. Raw material. This can be new information, new research added to the research you've already done, or the raw material can be questions you pose after a closer examination of what you've written or what you've researched before. Cast back a scene or two, a chapter or two, and read closely, always asking the interrogatory 7. Who, what, where, when, how, why, and crucially for writers, by whose aid? Ask those every page or so, looking for deeper details you may have skimmed over, buried nuggets of ideas that will inform the scene you're in. Whitney tells us, buried somewhere in your unshaped collection of ideas, or even in the chapters you've already written, will lie the clues that your unconscious will recognize and pounce upon. Often when the flash of ideas comes to me well on in the writing, I find that I must go back and write in new material to support the change. Oddly enough, this is easy to do because the source of the illuminating flash nearly always grows from something already planted much earlier in my novel. I hadn't recognized it with my conscious mind until now. Once I do, it's easy to find the right place for it in the story, and the difficult obstacle surmounted, I'm on my way again. After you've explored this new raw material, give yourself time to mull everything over. Step away from the project with an active walk or a distracting activity. And 3, examine the new ideas that sprang up. She reminds us that this 3rd step is as important as the others, re-examining. We must look at the questions deliberately from time to time. Sooner or later, the answers come, and you can perhaps go in some marvelous new direction that your conscious mind had never expected you to take, but which you'll deal with eagerly once the answer is revealed. It is there in you, that force that can help you create, help you solve your most difficult writing problems. Discover how to use it and practice that skill. Always remember, first writing is sketch or draft, a first look. And as with all first looks, the essence may not be captured. As Whitney tells us on page 130, sometimes I think a fiction writer must get a story or novel down on paper before he can discover his true direction. What you may have written, however badly, is never wasted. Seeing it in written form, however rough, will set you on a surer course. When you can accept the fact that revision is a necessary part of successful writing, you will be able to face it more philosophically and professionally. By this time, revision is the phase I enjoy most. First writing is sometimes the joy when it catches fire, though often it can be painful and slow. But once it's all down, I can mold it into the shape I want. And thus, Whitney gives us the single largest and strongest and final key to defeating writer's block. Once it's all down, we can mold our story into any shape we want. We've reached the conclusion of our series on defeating writer's block. Next week, we begin a new and brief series to finish out May, What I Wish I'd Known About Writing and About Podcasting. The last Wednesday of this May will set up the return of the Summer Writing Challenge in June. Until next week, write on! Thanks for listening to The Write Focus, a podcast for writers at all levels, hosted by Emma Lee from Writers Ink Books, assisted by Remy Black and Edie Runes. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Music is licensed through Audio Jungle, called Background Music Loop. Its creator is Alexander Polishchuk, known on Audio Jungle as Plastic 3. The music comes in different iterations. Show notes and resource links for this and other episodes can be found at thewritefocus.blogspot.com. Write to us at winkbooks@aol.com when you have questions, comments, and speculations. We will try to answer you as quickly as possible. By the way, we will not mind your email address. That's rude. If you find value in our content, share with your writing friends or write a review. We're small beans here without the advertising budget of the big peeps, and you can make a difference. And whatever occurs, write on.